Today's episode of No Dunks is brought to you by Remarkably Remote, a new daily microcast from GoToMeeting, all about making work from home work for you. With indispensable intel on how to stay sane, motivated, and productive at home, we are here to help you in this brave new remote working world. Add to your flash briefing on Alexa or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
I'll stop asking you questions.
No, you can ask me questions. It was the tone when you asked me the question.
Okay, it just seems like you might have something in your bag. Was that a better tone?
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to No Buffs, the only Survivor podcast that runs like an old man. It's Thursday, March 26th. We're recapping the 7th episode of Survivor Winners at War, so watch your spoilers. I'm J.E. Skeets. Alongside me, through the power of technology, Tass Mellis.
Hello, everybody.
What's up, Tassie? We got the bearded one, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
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 The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last but not least, making this magic happen, it's J.D.
Hello.
There is, and here we are. Let's get right into it, guys. Maybe not as exciting of episode as our first No Buffs podcast, but not bad, and lots to break down here. The big three takeaways, I think, from this episode: Yule gets voted out at Tribal Council, Sandra quits Edge of Extinction, and maybe Adam's spidey senses are all wrong. But we're going to tackle these one by one. But yes, Yule gets voted out at Tribal Council. Wendell, Michelle, and Nick ultimately teaming up to take out, I guess, the last, truly last old schooler as he's sent to the edge. How shocked were you, especially, you know, the diehards there in JD and Trey?
Yeah, it's like the book I mentioned in our squad episode, The Fall of Giants. The Yule is the Austria-Hungarian Empire in 1918, and he's the last one to go. There's nobody else that before season 20 left on the game.
That's right.
And so what happened? I mean, is this old school, new school difference in play a thing? And I think it is.
It definitely seems like it could be, and Jeff Probst is certainly pitching it as the determining factor between these vote-offs, and I don't know. To me, it seemed like Yule was in a good position. He was playing it cool. He had Nick and Wendell on his side for the last vote in the last episode, but then he just got a little distracted by the fire tokens. He was playing slow, and then he hit the gas and floored it, and they were like, wow, this guy is planning ways to steal fire tokens? This is too dark. That's what they said in confessionals. This is too dark. And it's, once you're playing that hard, I guess it's tough for people to shake that, especially with Yule coming into the game with a reputation as a strategic mastermind, and then he comes out with these fire tokens plans. It's like he was playing too slow, and then suddenly he was playing too fast.
Yeah.
I think it's like a case of Yule's galaxy brain here getting him in trouble. I do believe that. I put less stock into this whole old school, new school thing being like the reason why, and they are really driving it home on the show. I don't buy that as much. I think it's just that, you know, after they lose the Tribal Council, you're right. There's like Yule and Nick, they agree on Wendell, and Wendell and Michelle, they agree on Yule. But then Yule comes up with this insane plan, which, by the way, like, we can talk out this plan. Was it edited on television? Because it almost was like, it was tough to follow, because here's how I took it. You know, Yule's plan is they're going to tell Wendell that Michelle would vote for Yule, mm-hmm. and that, of course, Wendell then should vote for Yule. But in reality, you know, Nick, Michelle, and Yule are all going to vote out Wendell, right? That's his plan. And then, you know, Yule says, okay, because there's this risk that my name gets written down, so I want a fire token. Right. So what was he actually saying? Like, we're going to do a split vote at the beginning, and then when we revote, we'll just get rid of Wendell, and hence why his name would have been written down? I was confused by even Wendell's... Or excuse me, Yule. My God, I can't even keep track of him. I was confused by Yule's, again, sort of like next level plan. Do you know what I'm getting at here?
Absolutely. I was confused too. And I think that was what he was proposing, because he wanted the goodwill. He wanted Michelle to get the goodwill so she would get all the fire tokens, and then she would pay Yule the fire token.
Yes.
Or a one fire token, because I'm willing to put my name out there.
Right. And so, and he keeps saying his name is written down. So again, I'm led to believe, and it seemed like it was edited a little bit, but he was saying, okay, Michelle and Wendell will vote for me, Yule. Mm-hmm. Nick and I will vote for Wendell. Mm-hmm. It'll be a 2-2 tie, and then we go to a revote, and that's when we'll do the 3-1 on Wendell. He's gone, and he'll feel like, well, Michelle sort of was like, it's got to be you. I'm sorry, babe. You know, maybe then he feels like he'll give his tokens to her. And then you're right. Then Yule, because he said, well, my name was written down. I'm going out on a limb here. You give me at least one for this.
Right.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's sort of what his crazy plan was. And he probably was just doing a little too much here.
I was surprised Michelle didn't vote for Wendell just because he called her babe.
Yeah.
Had
they
enough
always
that.
Call We've, each other babe.
Yeah, she called him babe too.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I missed
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in this instance, I can see a little link between the NBA and Survivor, because the old heads would say, well, the young guys can't take a little abrasiveness. They can't just take a little bit of a plan. Like, Yule is just, what, he said something, and they're backtracking? They can't handle it? And so he overplayed the game because the generations just clashed. I'm not sure if that's just the storyline that they're overplaying, but it seems like it happened.
I think there was
either way, though, I think Wendell is Harry Houdini. I can't believe he survived. I thought he was toast again. And now,
speaking of old heads, the old Houdini. Yeah.
Listen.
I'm more of a David Blaine guy myself. I'm new school.
What about Chris Angel? Isn't he the new guy? Anyway, so I'm two shows into Survivor, and I thought Wendell was toast again last night. I thought, don't do it, Wendell. I mean, you're the only one that I know. I want you to win this whole thing. And what I thought sealed his fate was when they were at tribal council, and basically he and Michelle had a little domestic dispute, like an old married couple, you know, like she was sort of saying, well, we have got that relationship history, but that doesn't really count for anything, or it's not gonna save you. And then he sort of went back at her, and I thought, well, you could have at least like said something to her to maybe make her think that you were at least going to be friends long term. But wasn't he saying, like, I think I had this right. He was saying, if I go to Edge of Extinction, I wouldn't be able to come back and really work with you guys because I wouldn't trust you anymore. I think that's
yeah.
what I...
Yeah.
That's what, yeah. yeah. He said the opposite of what Nick said, because Nick was like, you know what? If I go to Edge and I come back, I'd love to work with you guys again. And Wendell's like, no, screw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, well, that he's gone for sure, because the one he really needed, I thought, was Michelle, because that was his ex-girlfriend or whatever. And he kind of like took a dump on her right there, and I thought, oh man, that you just lost right there. But again, Yule come out at that. Yule, I mean, for Yule to blow that is pretty bad. I thought he had the other two on his side.
Are you telling me Yule blew a 3-1 lead?
he did. He seemed to do that. I couldn't believe it. And that creative editing there as well, when you saw Wendell, I think, wrote first where it wrote Yule. And then someone wrote Wendell.
Yeah, you'll
do it. And then you couldn't see the... Yeah, that's right. And then you couldn't see the other two. And I thought, oh, yep, this is dead. He's gone. And then, bang, he survived. So
We talked about this on the first No Buffs podcast, but I am more convinced than ever that Wendell and Michelle are playing up this sort of, like, tiff. I mean, I know they did really date in real life, and, of course, they no longer do. So something, of course, went wrong. But I really believe that they're leaning into this, especially Wendell, to show everybody else, hey, we're not a twosome. We're not together. I don't even like her. She doesn't like me. And I think it's all a ruse. I think, you know, because they have some relationship, even if it's no longer a boyfriend and girlfriend, it's like, I think they're just playing it up here. I mean, even Michelle gave Wendell a fire token.
Yeah.
I mean, that was slipped into the episode, like, as a bit of, like, I guess an apology? I don't even know what the really truly reason was.
I think it was a gesture of goodwill. Really.
Yeah.
It was just...
That's a brilliant strategy, though, if that's what they've discussed, you know, before the show. I think that's fantastic, because it definitely feels like they don't like each other and there is some lingering tension. So it's the perfect way to disguise that they're actually scheming against everybody else. So good on them if that's the case.
Yeah.
At the very least, I think that Wendell is leading the charge here, saying people know that we had a relationship before. We obviously know each other, but that is not a reason to vote me off just because I'm in a pair now and was in a pair on my previous season. And we've seen like a Boston Rob and Amber go to the finals. We've seen pairs go super deep. He's saying, Hey, just because we were together doesn't mean we're necessarily a pair, despite the fact that they have been working together for most of this. He's just trying to leave himself an out, it really feels like, so that he could backstab her and not feel bad about it, or that other people could use him in a vote as well. I think he's just trying not to get voted off for something he did before the show even started.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, why if they're playing it up, then why is Michelle specifically talking about how much he hurt her in her confessional that the other players wouldn't even hear?
Yeah, that is true. That's true. In confessions, you think we would have maybe have gotten we're just playing here. Like, we actually have a great relationship. Didn't work out in our dating life, but we're just putting this on. That's a good point. You would think, if that was the case, they would say it in confessions, and then the show would want to show that, because it'd be like, wow, this is amazing. Everything they're doing here is actually fake. Yeah, that's a good point. But I do really, truly believe Wendell is leaning into, like, sort of the villain role, like, or more of a bad guy attitude to help his game.
Right.
Because I think it's actually working in the sense of, like, maybe people are like, he's not going to win this game, but this is his best chance to go far. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Playing for sort of this sort of like cocky, arrogant, angrier. And here's the thing. Maybe he was like that his first time out and we just never saw the edit, because he wins the game and he's just like portrayed as this really cool, awesome guy, which, you know, from our experience meeting him, he is. So it's always tough with the edit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the edit, especially at this point in the game, is a bitch. I can't even imagine tackling the amount of footage that they have.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything on edge of extinction, and you got three different tribes going. And there was actually a reward challenge that was cut out of the episode altogether.
Yeah.
And it was a slingshot one. I love the slingshot ones. But, and then, you know, so you have a certain amount of time with Selle, and then you have a certain amount of time to focus on Wendell and Michelle's fraught relationship that's extremely complicated, I think, in real life and in the game.
Yeah.
So we're just not getting all the information. I mean, listening to Rob has a podcast this morning. I mean, he, at the beginning of the show, he's basically, did I miss an episode? Like, there's so much that happened, and it's, a lot of it kind of didn't make sense. Like, the decision making, especially the decision to get rid of Yul, considering the previous episode, Yul, Nick, and Wendell seemed like a really tight alliance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was completely wrong on that call. I was saying that. I was like, these three guys are tight. They're going far. And whoops. Yeah. And I mean, maybe a part of it was because of what Wendell was doing at the last tribal council, where he was really coming guns ablaze and saying maybe way too much. And that sort of spooked Yul. And then they had the conversation in this podcast or this episode today, you know, where Yule's like, what were you doing there, man? Like, you were making me feel uneasy. And sort of Wendell apologizes. And there's all that.
Right.
But you're right. It's like, really, what? Okay, we get why Yule's maybe trying to get rid of Wendell because he's spooked, and maybe Wendell's trying to get rid of Yul because he knows that he's spooked, and he's like, okay, he's got to go. What is Nick thinking here? I think that's a really interesting part to me. Like, why is Nick ultimately, with Michelle, of course, but ultimately making the decision of, like, let's keep Wendell and Yule's got to go? Does anyone have a take on that?
My take is that Nick is doing whatever the pretty girl tells him to do.
Interesting.
He was kind of the same with Parvati. I mean, he ended up voting her out, but he was just like a little puppy dog with her. And Michelle is playing the game hard, and she can manipulate people, especially guys like Nick, who are little puppy dogs who will basically just follow orders. That's my take based on yesterday's episode.
I think, but there's...
Didn't he bring it up with her, though? Wasn't he the first one to say after they basically had their one-on-one with each person? But then he brought it up to her. He basically said, yeah, Wendell's irking me, but I don't know, Yule's irking me. Would you object to voting off Yul? Mm-hmm. And then they kind of went that direction.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, I actually agree with sort of what Tass is saying here, because we even heard from Nick in this episode. It feels like, you know, Yule's history really did him in here too, right?
Yeah.
The idea that he is a game bot and he is thinking five steps ahead, and he's obviously well liked. And Nick says he's worried about going with Yul because Yul sort of makes the decisions because he's so much smarter than everybody else. So it's cool even if you're with him, but you're locked into his set plans, and everybody then knows that really Yul is the one running things
right.
within a smaller sort of alliance. I think there is some truth. Like, I think what Nick's thinking is, if I roll with Wendell, and of course with Michelle there right now, I'm at least a little closer on par with a guy like Wendell, especially when it comes to like making the plan, strategizing. Where if I'm with Yule, even if the case is I'm 50-50 and we're making these all these decisions together, that's not going to be the perception. Everyone's going to be like, no, no, Yule did that, or Yule came up with that and you were just a number. I think there's something, I think there's some truth to that. I think that's actually smart thinking by Nick. Like, even if I roll with Yule and I'm great all the way to the end, no one's going to believe me, really, that I did anything. Of course, outside of, like, backstabbing Yule later down the line, which is always a play. But, yeah, I think you're sort of right there, Tass. I think he's just like, if I just roll with Yule, I'm screwed.
And that's the real old school versus new school dichotomy, is that people like Boston Rob, Sandra, Parvati, Yule as a previous mastermind in the game, they've got the reputation that it's like, it's not necessarily that they're not playing the game at the same speed as the new school people, but the new school people watched these people for 10 years. Mm. They built statues for Rob and Sandra, you know? So they're just voting out the big games. It's like if Michael Jordan showed up at a one-on-one tournament, he would be the first guy you want to get out because he's Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you're right. So look, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more here, but the other big news from this episode was Sandra quitting. Edge of Extinction, this is the first scene. We get Parvati and Sandra arriving to Edge, and you know, we sort of get them telling their version of what happened, and Sandra really breaks it down. You know, I gave Denise my idol, she turns around and took me out with it, and they're all like dumbfounded. I mean, Boston Rob at one point says, you let Denise decide your fate in the game? Everyone's just shocked. And then what felt like 30 seconds later, after Tyson explains, oh yeah, this place sort of sucks, we gotta go up a mountain to get our rice, she's like, all right, peace out, see ya, and just goes and waves the white flag and quits. And I guess my question off that is, you know, she's won the game twice, she calls herself the queen, continues to call herself the queen. Can you be the queen of Survivor if you have a legit straight up quit on your resume?
No.
Wow. Woo. No.
Absolutely not. I mean, I get why she did it, and she's, you know, fair enough. She's, you know, she said herself, I'm not getting back into the game. I suck at challenges, and that's what you got to do to get back into the challenge. I'm uncomfortable. I've won twice. She's also, they don't say this in the show, but she's guaranteed $35,000 just for being on the show.
Yeah.
So bye.
And she was just on. She was just on the season prior where she got paid. I'm sure to be on exactly. As an idol. Yeah.
That's also a very good point.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna quit, you're gonna lose Jeff Probst's respect, and therefore you are no longer the queen of Survivor. I mean, it's that simple.
It seemed to me a little bit strange because, you know, you don't go and play Survivor and then complain about what goes on out there, if you know what I mean. Like, I mean, she must know, like, it's tough. Those conditions are tough. And you saw earlier in the episode, I think it was Ethan was talking with somebody.
Parvati.
And they were having a tough time, and he was like, you know, I'm looking forward to this being over. And it's like, I thought you guys were a bit tougher than this, you know? You've been on these islands
okay,
before.
Well, in Ethan's defense, he just had a stem cell transplant, and he's literally worried about dying out there.
Yeah, different than Sandra.
Okay, but I did notice that, and I thought, you know, why is he even there then? I mean, if his health is at risk, shouldn't he really not be there?
I think that's what he's struggling with. Yeah, absolutely is a part of it.
Right.
I'm sure that's exactly what's going through his head. Should I be even still staying here? But back to Sandra. I mean, I'm a little shocked that she didn't even give it a night on Edge of Extinction. You know, like, maybe sleep on it. I get it. You're upset. You just got played by Denise. You have about a less than a 1% chance of winning any challenge against some of these juggernauts to get back in the game. I also get that. But, like, I don't know. Just sleep on it. Feel how you know, wake up in the morning and then make that decision. That part was a little weird.
She said, though, she didn't want to get eaten by or bitten by rats.
That's true.
Is she exaggerating?
But I do love that she made her choice right away. They're like, oh, no food? Oh, well, see you later.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Like, do the math. Like, count how many people are left. You know that there's going to be a challenge in the next 2 to 3 days. I would have lasted at least through that. And then, you know, Sandra, unless the challenge is sitting out, that she probably wouldn't win it. But as soon as that's over, then go home. Like, I just wait a couple of days. But I don't blame her. She did win twice. She doesn't really have much more to prove. They built her a statue. But she did still quit.
Do you think she can be considered the queen, though, still, Trey?
she'll always call herself the queen.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so that's the tough part. But I don't know. Once a queen, always a queen, I think.
I'd like to think she refuses to win via the edge of extinction, which is cheap in and of itself. A queen doesn't win that way. And she went out on her own terms. I don't think she even wants that on her resume.
It's not a bad point. Sauce,
but no, but she did a calculation. But I'd like to think it was the other way around. But she's, yeah, she said, I'm not going to win a challenge out here. This is not going to happen. So I'm out. And she was probably a little embarrassed, but.
Yeah, but like Trace said, like, I mean, look, they're going to be having a challenge to get back in the game, we assume, very soon. So at most, she's going to be out there, like, I'm guessing, like, 2, maybe 3 days and nights. Yeah, you probably are not going to win the challenge, but we also don't know what it is. It could be a puzzle, for crying out loud, right? It probably will end with some sort of puzzle or something. She's pretty good at that stuff. Like, I don't know. There's a 1% chance or a minuscule chance, but she's like, no, I don't stay at 3-star hotels. Bye. That's really what it was. There's no robe here. See ya. I mean, it's incredible. But I'm also, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but yeah, you can't be the queen. I'm no longer calling her the queen of Survivor. If you quit the game, I don't care if it's on Edge. It's, you know what? To bring it back to basketball, it's like people that do try to convince me that Vince Carter is the greatest Raptor of all time. No, I can't get on board with that because he did sort of quit on the team and he quit on the franchise. It's very similar to me. He's obviously a legend, no doubt. One of the greatest ever, no doubt. But that's a black mark that I can't let go. And I'm sorry I got to do this with Sandra as well.
Wow.
Yeah, was that too much? Was that extreme, was it?
Well, it's just then who's the queen? Who's the queen and who is the king? I'm guessing Boston Rob is the king just because, you know, he's the legend that's out there. Parvati, I suppose, would assume the title.
Well, I would say who's the queen is we might find out at the end of this season. I mean, it could be a Denise. It could be a Kim. It could be a Sarah. I mean, if we get another 2-time winner in a female form and they dominate the game or something like that again or a big move. We already saw Denise take out Sandra, for crying out loud. So, TBD, I guess, Trey, for me. It's like when the title sometimes gets stripped off a wrestler and it's like, you know, there's like a tournament for it or something like that. And then we can decide at a pay-per-view.
Yeah, sounds good. It's like a season 2 of Game of Thrones. There's 5 kings. There's 5 queens left still out there. We're waiting to see who will triumph. Yeah. Who's the Stannis Baratheon out there?
All right, so we did get a lot of Edge of Extinction. You know, we had all that first scene, of course, with the Sandra development and her quitting. And then we went back to it after we went to the Blue Tribe for a little bit with all the apologizing. And we had what you were talking about, Lee. We had Ethan struggling, you know, with how to sort of... I like how he said it. Like, how to exist in the in-between world, I think is what he said. Like, this... It is weird, like... We're not in the game, but we're in the game. And it's like, where are we? And you know, obviously his health issues and just mentally, I'm sure, and physically exhausted. Parvati sort of building him back up, though. You could see the sadness in Ethan's eyes. Right? Like that struggle, that was a pretty powerful scene. That was raw.
Yeah, it was very cool to see the actual bond that they had. And it just looked like you were watching two friends talking to each other and they just happened to be playing Survivor.
Yeah, and he was talking about... I will say, there was something a little weird to me about... He's talking about stem cell transplants and, you know, obviously battling cancer and whether he should even be out there. Parvati's just like, yeah, let's just do some yoga. And, hey, fasting is awesome. Yeah. Like, she also did a lot of great things. Like, she really did build him back up, but she was throwing out some strange recommendations or advice there, I thought. But anyway,
It's very on character for her if you follow her on Instagram. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah,
okay,
it's on character. And also, she did a lot of complaining in a couple of scenes prior to that when she entered the Edge of Extinction. Mm-hmm. She was doing plenty of complaining. I would find it very difficult to anoint her the queen if she doesn't really even appreciate the game. At least Sandra walked off, lost, and said, you know what? I got. I got beat.
Yep.
Parvati just whined and complained for a good, I don't know, like 40 seconds of unedited film. And then, yes, she was nice to Ethan. She was. In the end, she was a helpful person, and she plays the game well. But I struggled with that. I just struggled listening to that. Play the game.
I see grown men crying their eyes out when they lose championships, Taz. So you know.
I'd rather crying. That's natural. That's a natural feeling to be distraught. But I got voted out. Well, yeah, probably
it happens.
So then we get Ethan finding the next challenge clue, if you want to call it that, and it's the race for fire tokens. Lee, what did you think of this scene where they all open up that parchment at the same time and it's like, oh, these tokens are basically at the top of the hill and everybody just drops what they're doing and takes off? What did you think of that?
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out like when they know they have to go and find that there's a clue to go out there and find, and then they have to read them all together. That took discipline to read all those scrolls at the same time, for one, because wouldn't you want to just grab it and read it and maybe, you know, maybe grab that like 5 second head start on some of them?
Yeah, I think it's like an official though rule. Like somebody tells one of the survivors, hey, there's something over there. So somebody go and get it and bring it back. And then you have to open it together and read it together. I know what you mean. Like,
editing.
Yeah. Yeah. True. I think they're like, that's one of the rules. Like it literally says on it, you have to open it together. But you're right. I mean, like if Russell had found it back in the day, would he just be like, gives him a little middle finger and just scurries off? I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know what
like is. So let me just ask you, is there anything that stops that guy from maybe getting the first scroll, reading it, and then just throwing the others over his head and saying, you guys go and figure it out for yourself? I mean,
I don't know. It's a bit of a gray area. I'm not sure what they would do. It's definitely a production rule, but it's like, would they also love it if they were like somebody gave the middle finger to the rule? Or is that even fair? I don't know. I'm not sure in that situation.
They seem to pretty quickly turn on each other when you know that something like that's at stake. Like they seem to, you know, pretty quickly be out for their own because.
Oh yeah.
Now I think I've got this guy's name right. The one with the Boston Red Sox hat, is that Boston Rob?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I wanted to make sure. Right. But he, now, if I'm right as well, he found three of those,
the
fire tokens, yeah. But the other guys, they were pretty bad at looking for them because didn't the other people, they were kind of right there and they couldn't see them.
So here's what happens. Yeah. They all open up their scrolls and then they're like, boom, let's go. And it's a race. And we're led to believe that Boston Rob just sprints there. I mean, just straight up sprints.
Yes.
In fact, Tyson says that's exactly what's happening. Like, Boston Rob, he's going way too fast out of the gate. Don't worry, I'll catch that fatso, basically, he says. Portly chap, I guess he called
portly
him.
Portly chap.
Yeah. And then this was interesting editing, though, because it appears to us that Tyson does find the first one.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, Tyson's got one. And then they're all like trying to figure out, well, where are the other ones? Who's got any more? Is that it? Like, what's going on? Who's lying? And then we've seen more and more of these over the years, but the still pretty rare flashback where we then see through the editing that Boston Rob had already found three of them, and he gives us sort of a play-by-play breakdown and a baseball reference task. Three out of four were in the majors.
Sit down, Ted Williams. Yeah. Sit down, Carl Yastrzemski. This is mine.
Tony Gwynn. Eat a dick. Yeah. Rest in peace, Tony Gwynn. But three out of four were in the majors. I'm batting 750. I'm the best that's ever played. That's what he said. So, yeah, that was, I guess, sprinting worked out in the end. He got there before everybody, and they were just basically lying in like a pile of rocks. They weren't really that hard to find. You just had to get there first.
I'll admit I got M. Night Shyamalan'd on this one. I was like, wow, they didn't find him? I guess this is going to be one of those things like Rob said for the challenge the previous week. And maybe it'll take a couple of weeks to find these. But apparently he was just fast and had pre-scouted the trails. I guess that's something that players will do from here on out if they ever have something like an Edge of Extinction. They're going to be out there just looking for places where they might drop advantages at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just got to know the lay of the land because they were talking about names for like geographical features. He's like, I was on the small lookout. Then I went over to the large lookout. I'm like, you guys have been out there doing nothing for a long time to have named every spot on this beach.
Yeah, so now we have Boston Rob with a bunch of fire tokens, and we have Natalie with a bunch of fire tokens just on the edge I'm talking about. We assume there is going to be a challenge to get back in the game for one of these people on the edge soon. JD, do you think these fire tokens are going to be able to be used as like an advantage in a challenge, you know, in terms of like, you know, one token gets you a 5-second head start or something like that. It'll almost be like the old eliminator rules in American Gladiators. Like, you build it up, that lead, and then you get to start early. What do you think?
100%. It could be that, or they've in the past, they've given you sort of an afternoon tutorial on how to do a specific challenge. So it could be something like that. Or it could be simply a matter of buying your way back into the game. So we've got 3 and 3 for Natalie and Rob, right? Is that right?
Or is Natalie a 4? I feel like she has four. Yeah.
So what if they said, what if there's like a, hey, if you have 6 fire tokens, you can get back into the game. And then they are relying on people who are still in the game to give you the fire tokens to get back in the game. It could be as simple as that. I don't know. I mean,
right. So you're saying maybe, yeah, there's not even really a challenge per se, like a physical or mental, like a puzzle thing to get back in the game. It's more leaning into this sort of economy of these fire tokens and almost pleading in a way or whatever, bartering in a way with people that are still in the game.
Yeah.
To allow one of them back in. Wow, you blew my mind with that thought.
And you know, you're basically, if you're still in the game, you're literally buying an ally, right? Like, that person is all of a sudden on your alliance, and you have the numbers, which is what you need to win Survivor.
And then you wonder if some of those, if this is a thing that happens, we have no idea. You wonder if, like, I don't know, like Yule could be like, hey, Sophie, I gave you a fire token. Or, you know, people could be like, those ones that showed up in your bag, that was for me.
Yeah.
And people could be lying about that or not. Yeah, that would be a fascinating dynamic. We know they're going to mean something, although it would be hilarious if they mean absolutely nothing in the end and you can buy yourself like a buff on the way out, like on the flight home or something. Yeah. Like, that would be incredible.
Exit through the gift shop.
Okay, so then the next scene after that, we check in with two of the other tribes. We get the red tribe, Decal tribe. This one, not much happening. We get some tribe bonding, I would say, over how funny Tony looks when he runs, which is always great. And there is like Kim seems concerned about having a plan in place when they come to the merge. And it does appear like there's a pretty solid 3, maybe even 4 with Tony in this red tribe of at least Kim, Denise, and Jeremy. And again, maybe Tony's a lock with them too. Like, they're looking like, we know we're going to get to emerge next episode. Like, you feel pretty confident about this alliance that this red tribe has going?
I like to see that they're putting a lot of thought into it ahead of time, and it seems like there is a pre-existing relationship right between Kim and Jeremy, so they're a little bit locked in there, and Denise obviously seems to be a well-liked person amongst camp. I think it makes sense to have a group of people ready to go once you get into the tribe, because, you know, we're going to get down to the point where there's going to be basically a bunch of same-sized voting blocks, and if you've got your 3 locked in already, you can kind of help choose exactly which way the game is going to go. So, yeah, you definitely got a pre-plan.
Yeah, for sure. I'm 100% in on the Denise, Kim, and Jeremy alliance, if it's an actual thing. I don't see Tony making it far past the merge myself, just because he's too wild. He's too erratic. You can't really depend on him, especially at this stage of the game. And he's a threat. He's very well liked. And we're getting into individual challenges. And if they're physical, then he is very good at challenges, as I remember.
Is he? Is he that good? I'm not so sure. If you saw him run on the beach, I wouldn't have a lot of faith in what he can do. I don't think he's a juggernaut out there with some of these other people. That's for sure. He's actually doing... He's oddly playing like a woo type game to me. He's sort of just the like funny guy out there.
Definitely.
Like that he's not strategizing whatsoever. He's doing a really good job of like trying to tone that down despite the spy shack. Yeah, you wonder if he can keep that in check when you get to it's like individual immunity time and there's idols out there.
Yeah.
And he knows, you know, will he go like, oh, I got to do everything just for myself? Or will he have some faith in this possibly alliance here with Kim, Denise, and Jeremy?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the spy shack incident is is exactly what I'm talking about. He just panics, he disappears, and nobody can strategize with him, and nobody can calm him down. He's just going to do what Tony's going to do.
Yeah. Isn't that almost the Tony strategy, though? Like, I don't think he realizes that he is the meat shield for everybody else. Right. They will be happy to keep him around because they, you know, they're assuming that at some point he will not have an immunity idol, he will not win individual immunity, and then we can get him.
Yeah, I actually think Tony's in for the long run here. I think he's playing a great game because he's just being a goofball, and you're not really a threat when you're a goofball. And people are like, keep him around, and he's obviously likable, and he's a number for a lot of people.
That's how he won.
Yeah, I know. I think it's working well for him is my point. Okay, so then we go to the green tribe, the Yara tribe. We get this, once again, this Ben versus Adam like tension.
Ooh,
these guys
it.
Hate each other,
I
right?
I love it. It's the seething animosity. It's so good.
Who do you guys side with in this you know, one-on-one sort of battle of wills? Like Ben, who's like, I don't know, a louder gentleman, of course, and you know, maybe sort of annoying, as I guess Adam calls him. But then there's Adam. He's sort of like a whiny sort of in a way, and seems really upset out there, and he's like obviously paranoid. I don't know. What side do you side with if you have to pick one or the other?
Yeah, so Adam is that youngish kid. Is that one?
Yes.
Oh, get him off. Yeah, he drove me crazy last night. God, stop complaining. Oh, my God. How old is he? Looks like he's about 23 or 24. Is that right?
He's got to be one of the younger ones out there for sure because he was a young winner.
Yeah, oh, my God. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm an older gentleman these days, but I was like, if this kid would drive me crazy, just whining and complaining. What on earth have you got to be complaining about in your life? You're on Survivor already. You obviously don't have a job. I mean, this could really set you up for your career, and you're out there complaining. So get off.
Your Survivor takes are amazing. Your Survivor take is always, why are you complaining?
You know what you signed up for, buddy.
Well, he's paranoid, Lee, because, you know, everyone is trying to figure out where the idol is, if anybody has it on that tribe. And Adam is convinced that Sarah or Ben has it. And we all know as the viewer, and Sarah does too, of course, Adam, you're wrong. Your spidey senses are dead wrong. Yes. It's Sophie that has it. Yes. Yeah, it's Sophie that has it, you idiot.
Now I can't get all the names right, but the other one was saying, almost like she was saying, I'll basically empty all my possessions and show
Sarah,
that I don't have it.
Yep.
Yeah, and almost saying like, if I'm prepared to do it, then everyone else should do it. But the other girl didn't do it. No one else did it anyway, but she wasn't going to do it because she had the idol. Is that right?
Well, yeah, Sophie has it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We don't know where Sophie has it. Is it in her bag? Is it on her body? Is it buried? We don't know. But you're right. I thought that part was a little interesting that Sarah was like, "All right, look, dude, I don't have it. Let's just empty our bags and be done with this, so you can stop freaking out that I have it because I don't." But I mean, has Sarah talked to Sophie in advance? Like, hey, don't have it in your bag in case he calls our bluff on this, right? Like, you know, we got to empty everything, like. Sarah knows Sophie has it, so you know, unless she was trying to blow up her spot, I don't think she would have been. They must have had like a prearranged, like, I don't know, put it in your crotch and we'll all empty our bags or something.
It read like a very cop move to me, because you know Sarah's a cop, so she gets the easily intimidated perp, and she's like, hey, fine, you want me to show you everything I got, I'll show you. He's like, no, that's okay. But I mean, seriously, they're sitting there, Adam is accusing Sarah and Ben of having the idol, and they're like, no, 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 no. And Sophie's just sitting there being completely quiet, looking away. Like, in that moment, wouldn't you be like, thou doth protest too much?
Yeah.
How did you not pick up on that at all? Or why did you not just mention her name when you're saying people who might have the idol? There's only three people there. It doesn't take much to throw Sophie's name into the mix.
Yeah, but Adam is like, he spins it the other way, right? He's like, oh, yeah, Sarah and Ben, they're, like, being so loud, pretending to find one, and, like, they're being so, you know, demonstrative that they don't have one. That means they do have one. Like, he straight up just tricks himself,
definitely.
With the old, you know, I don't know what you would call that, but it's, like, that's exactly what he does.
Yeah, it's paranoia. He's one of those players that is completely paranoid all the time. The game is always in his head. And he just doesn't know what to do with that energy. except for, you know, accuse people.
Yeah, and well, and the other part is, and it's, you know, all the credit in the world to Sophie, to her, because, like, he really is what he's saying here, and Trey, you were getting at this. To me, Adam is saying, well, I know Sophie doesn't have it. She ain't going to find an idol. Right, like yeah. That's how it read to me. He's like, no, it'd be one of you two, either Sarah or Ben. Like, that's more your sort of MO. That's Sophie's not out there looking for idols, and even if she is, she's not finding one. Like, she's mad underrated. Yeah. Like, I'm gaining more and more respect for her. I know everybody's a winner out there, but like, even like, she's pretty badass in these challenges too. Like, she holds her own and is like, seems to always be on puzzles and stuff like that. It's like, she's pretty damn good.
Yeah, 100%. It seems to be the dominators in this season are the quiet ones, the quiet, calculating, and just calm, cool, collected. Because you got Sophie, you got Denise, even Sarah to a certain degree, and Jeremy as well.
Yeah,
they're just playing it cool.
Yep, that's exactly right. Okay, so we have the immunity challenge. We had the great strategy in the end from the Green Tribe to go extra slow when transferring the water on their saucer. So they only had to do the one trip. They didn't spill a lot of water like the other two tribes were. And that worked, paid off. And then, you know, they took care of the wooden puzzle. Sophie and Ben crushed that one. And then we get the very close, the photo finish between the blue tribe and the red tribe. And we had Wendell talking trash to Probst. there was a lot coming out of this one. You know, this was, we glossed over it when we were talking about Yule getting voted out, but you know, there was a lot of talk earlier, right after it, that, wow, man, what is Wendell doing? Like, you know, just shut up and stop talking to Probst and stop trying to call him over. Do you think that was overblown or like when Wendell was talking to us on our podcast, he says he likes to talk a little trash when he hoops.
Yeah. I think we didn't see something the way it was edited. Either it didn't get caught because they made such a big deal about him talking smack. And I don't think it was that one shot of him trying to get Jeff's attention, because in the previous season, Wendell got screwed out of winning a challenge because he didn't get Jeff's attention.
Yeah.
Famously. So there is something else there that we didn't see. It has to be, because why would they make a big deal of that? It doesn't make any sense to me.
There is that little moment when they're crossing on the beams and Jeff yells out something like, Selle loses a ton of water. And Wendell's like, don't exaggerate, Jeff. And Nick chimes in right then. He's like, hey man, just focus on the task at hand.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, you know, last week where Wendell was talking to Jeff. So I just have to imagine he's talking to him the entire time they're out there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And didn't someone say, like, just ignore him about Jeff, because Jeff was giving it back? It sounded like, you know, like two kids bickering, you know, just ignore him, don't worry, he'll go away.
But
the funniest thing I noticed from the challenge was Wendell's team, you know, they didn't quite have enough water to fill up the thing to drop the other things.
Puzzle pieces, yep.
Yeah. And Wendell was trying to wring out his shirt to give it a bit more water. Like, I mean, how much is on that possibly? Like a couple of drips. But
hey, man, every drip counts. Did you see it? There's a quick shot where Wendell, I at first thought he was just cooling himself down with the water. He was splashing it on himself. But I think what he was trying to do is like, get it on his shirt.
Yeah,
like trying to just get as much water onto his shirt that he could then wring it in. But
we don't know who the queen is anymore, but Wendell, certainly the drip god.
Yes. Wario Wendell leaning into that. So it was a close one. It was bang, bang. And I think I did hear Stephen Fishback say about that idea of like, hey, Jeff, Probst, we're almost ready. Get over here. And like you perfectly said there, JD, like he's already had an experience with this where he didn't call Probst over and it backfired. But also, Fishback was like, it's almost beneficial for you to always call Probst over that you're almost done, because the other tribe instinctively stops what they're doing and looks over for a second, because you're like, oh, like, are they done? Are they close? It's like just one of those weird, like, human nature things where you're like, oh, they must be done, so let me just look away from the puzzle for a second. So it's like, it's almost oddly like a tiny little strategy. It could buy you a second. Of course, they end up losing by a second. But I'm with you. There either is more going on between Wendell and Probst, or they're making a way bigger deal out of Wendell just saying, let's not exaggerate, Jeff, while they're carrying a giant saucer. Like, that was it, really. Then we basically talked about the next scene. That was them, you know, really deciding that they were going to get rid of Wendell. And then we get to Tribal Council. And we had Yule breaking down the market economy of fire tokens. Really, really breaking it down. The guy is just brilliant. And we get more on the Wendell-Michelle, you know, existing, pre-existing relationship and all that. And ultimately, Yule voted out and gives his fire tokens to Sophie and Sarah.
Yeah.
Anything else to add from this episode? Either random observations or anything from those scenes we just went through?
Well, listen.
Super weird when they were going to Tribal Council and Survivor played a song with lyrics.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah. I looked over to Laura. I was like, music?
Yeah.
Words? Just didn't make sense. I don't know if they've ever had like an actual song that didn't just have like, you know, didgeridoos and bayoyos in it.
Yeah, I mean, and the lyrics were something like, you better be ready, they're coming for you, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what they said, but that was, yeah, I can't remember that ever being a case. You're right, Trey.
I thought maybe, did Sia write a song for them? Because she's a super fan, you know? Is that her singing? And then I tried to Google songs on Survivor, and I couldn't find anything, but yeah, it was weird.
Another thing I love, a random observation, I love how half-assed a frisk is on Survivor. Anytime somebody comes up with like, well, let's just frisk each other, all everybody does is sort of like half-ass, like pat their pockets and like sort of pretend to like dangle their shirt a little bit.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's like they've done this multiple times. They're like, well, we're going to have to frisk everybody. And everyone just sort of does like, no one's even looking at each other. They sort of just do this like little jostle of their clothes a little bit. And they're like, okay, I guess that's good. I mean, come on, like let's go full on like you're going into a sporting event, you know, like really frisk me, pat me down. Like, come on. How do you know I don't have it? It always kills me for some reason.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to check under somebody's balls, really.
No.
Yeah. Hey, you don't want to be the frisker on Survivor.
That's fair.
I remember that guy that was frisking everybody out there? Not good.
Carlton. Lee, what did you think of Tony giving two thumbs up? See that scene?
Yeah, I did see that scene. You know, I'm watching it on my TV, so I couldn't really go and get a screen grab of it. But I wanted to say, you know, something like, this is a very solid show tonight. But, unfortunately, couldn't get the screen grab of it. So if someone else has got it out there, please send it along.
It was a good two thumbs up, too. It was really good, a vibe of you. It was very strange, like how he was doing it. Taz, I have a question for you. Okay, so us, the No Dunks team, let's say we can do the five of us for whatever reason. I know they only had four, but we're in the challenge and you're our leader. Are you going with the green strategy of like, let's go slow and steady? Or are we going with the, you know, let's like just go a little quicker. We'll lose some water, but don't worry. We'll make it up in just two quick sort of, you know, runs of the challenge. What do you think is the right call?
Well, I got the vibe from that challenge that they have seen something like that before.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
And I'm not quite clear if they knew exactly how much water in that circular thing would fill that other container thing. Like,
right,
do you know that one full one fills the other one pretty well? Like,
I don't think they do, no. I don't think so.
Then I would go fast. I would not have the patience. I would like, even though they've, you know, done stuff like that before, I think one production note would be to show the overhead of the container to show where those flags would go down, like at what point you reach the top and finish the challenge. Like they didn't show that thingamajig once. So there is there's no payoff. There's no, hey, this is what they have to get to at any point. I would have liked that.
Yeah, I guess they're hoping that they just want the drama of, oh, Green Tribe taking it mad slow, not spilling any water. Is this going to work or not, right? Like, yeah, is it going to get to the top to release the puzzles? But
yeah,
you're right. We never see it. You're right.
The suspense of that was crazy for me. Like, that is a crazy gamble to me because not only does it take you way longer, like they were lapped when they were doing it almost, but it one false move near the end of that whole thing kills that strategy, right? Like,
yeah,
I would be, It's just, it was just a big gamble, and I'm glad it paid off for them. But wow, I don't think I'd have the balls to do that.
Yes, but you're right, especially when both of the other tribes are like, you know, going much, much faster than you are. Yeah. And you don't even know, like Tat said, you're like, is this going to work? Like, is this going to be enough water, or did we just completely blow this?
Yeah.
But I guess you could make a calculated guess that the producers of the game are thinking like, hey, you go slow and steady and you get all that water there, that will work. Mm-hmm. The odds of you getting all that water there are low, though, so maybe you go quicker and you're going to spill some. So
I'm pretty sure they get walked through the challenges, don't they? Like, just this is what it is, and you actually walk the course almost.
Yeah, but I'm sure they're not like, hey, if you get your entire one saucer over here, that'll be enough.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to tell you that part. Yeah. You're gonna have to guess that part, I assume. But again, I think you could have a pretty good calculated guess, like, that'll work. But you still have to pull it off, right? Yeah. That's the other part. It's like, yeah, maybe one saucer will get it to the puzzles for the drop, but we still got to get all that water there and then into the thing, which isn't even that easy either.
Yeah, the real loser of this challenge is Nick, because he had actually done it before and he should have known.
Yeah, that's a good point. Only other thing I have, you already said it, JD, they did cut for time. Another challenge, a reward challenge that happened on day 17, so it never made it into the episode. I think it was for pizza, I read, JD. I don't know if you can clarify that, but yeah. So that was, it was cut for time, which with Edge of Extinction, you sort of have to do.
Yeah.
I mean, just unless you make this show an hour and a half, which they very easily could. Or I've also seen people say, why don't you make Edge of Extinction, which has been really entertaining this year, and it's helped in part by having all the legends there, of course. Why don't you make that like its own like bonus show on like CBS Access or something like that? To really give you an idea, I guess, of what's happening over there.
As a subscriber to CBS Access, I think that's a great idea.
Okay. And now that Yule is out, or at least to Edge, the longest tenured survivor player still on a tribe is... Do you know who?
I'm going to say Denise.
Not Denise. Ooh. Close.
It's Kim.
No, it's not Kim.
Oh.
Tony?
It's Sophie.
Oh, Sophie.
Ooh, of course.
Season 23. I think it's it's Sophie, Kim, and Denise. I don't know if it's that particular order, but it's Sophie, either Denise and Kim or something like that. Right. 23, 24, 25. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy stuff. All right, before we check Tremail, a quick word from our sponsors.
The Black Tux believes every groom deserves a better experience when it comes to finding formal wear, a suit or tuxedo for their big day. Did you guys know that the Black Tux was actually started by two guys who had one of the worst tuxedo fittings you could imagine?
I knew that because I listened to our podcast. Yeah. It's the only way I knew that.
Well, did you realize it's the first ever spite store?
No.
Eat your heart out, Larry David.
Oh, wow, it is.
That's right. This is a whole spite app. This is a spite business.
Yeah.
I love it. And it turns out the Black Tux guys aren't alone in this frustration. Just listen to these one-star reviews from competitor tux shops that shall not be named. This place sucks. They have moist scones and wobbly tables. Wait, my bad, my bad. That's a coffee shop. Here they are. Go elsewhere. This place is pretty terrible. Unless you're dressing like your grandpa for Halloween. We felt weird buying a suit from somebody so unhappy. We were afraid his bad vibes might follow us to our wedding day, so we left. When it comes to vibes on a wedding day, you want to treat it like an Instagram sticker. Chill vibes only. Anyways, what I love about the Black Tux is that they have an easy online ordering process that brings your suit or tuxedo straight to you. Just pick a style at theblacktux.com and request a free home try-on so you can feel the fit and quality before you commit. If online isn't your style, the Black Tux has spite showrooms all over the country where you can find your fit and plan your look. From there, they'll ship your order 2 weeks before your wedding so you can check it one last time. Talk about a commitment. Whether you're buying your outfit or looking to rent, you won't find a formal wear experience or designs like the ones you'll find at the Black Tux. So if you want your wedding to be remembered for the right reasons, remember right, you're ready for all the right reasons. Order your suit or tuxedo at theblacktux.com and enjoy 10% off with code DUNKS. At theblacktux.com, code DUNKS for 10% off your purchase. The Black Tux, formal wear for the moment.
Let's merge these two together. Let's all rent tuxes and then get a little DoorDash in our lives. Have a nice meal. We'll Zoom each other, FaceTime each other.
Excellent.
Yeah. Something there.
That's a great idea.
It has been 2 weeks since essentially all sports leagues and tournaments have been suspended or canceled, but it feels like we haven't watched a live game in about a year. That's how important sports are to a lot of people. And I can tell you, reading all the conversations between the employees of The Athletic, every one of those people is feeling all out of sorts too. But what I've also seen is a collaborative effort to come up with creative stories and ideas to keep sports fans engaged in these unique times. It's been impressive to see the writers and podcasters for The Athletic come together from the comfort of my own home, of course. Not seeing them in person wouldn't do that. To create stuff like a podcast with Joe Ingles on why he would be fine retiring from the NBA today, or rewatching classic games with writers who cover each of the teams involved, or what Brazilian soccer star Ronaldinho is doing in a Paraguayan jail. The Athletic can help keep you connected to the teams, the athletes, and the sports you love. Sign up now for a 90-day free trial to see for yourself the creativity, reporting, and storytelling that sets The Athletic apart. Just go to theathletic.com/nodunks for a 90-day free trial. Games aren't being played right now, but the stories that draw us all to sports, those don't go away. So go to theathletic.com/nodunks. We hope to see you there.
Okay, Tremel, I've got a question here. And if you have a question for us about Survivor, hit us up, nodunks@theathletic.com. Throw Survivor in the subject header. Helps us out. This one from Patrick in Denmark. What's up, no buffs? Well, I watched my first episode of Survivor because of you guys. I was very skeptical since reality TV really is not my cup of tea, or so I thought. I watched episode 6 first, the one you guys discussed last week, and I was hooked immediately. I had to watch the remaining episodes. I've now watched The Heroes versus Villains, Cook Islands, and I just started Pearl Islands. My God.
Wow.
I love it. As I watch, I can't help fantasizing about what being there would be like and how I would play. I think my biggest hurdle would be my fear of the jungle critters. That and my unathletic body, healthy appetite, and can't-do attitude. My question is this. Has anyone ever been injured by the wildlife while out there? I really hope you guys keep doing Survivor shows even after basketball returns. Again, much love. That's from Patrick all the way from Denmark, who is now a diehard Survivor fan.
You
love to see it. Yeah, we've had a lot of people tweet in and say, oh my God, you guys somehow got me hooked on Survivor because we started a podcast, which is great. The question, has anyone ever been injured by the wildlife out there? Injured 100%. But I don't think anyone's ever been evacuated because of an animal-caused injury, at least from my quick research and from what I can remember. Now, again, injuries, I remember Denise got bitten by something poisonous in the Philippines when she was out there. Way back in a few of the earlier seasons, John from Marquesas, he had the sea urchin spine in his finger. Kathy peed on it, if you remember. We had somebody get stabbed in the foot by a stingray back in Thailand. Richard Hatch, I think, got bit while wrestling a shark. So it happens. But no one has had to be evacuated.
Hang on. You can't just gloss over that. What the hell was he doing wrestling a shark?
There was a baby shark like in the shallow water, and this was on All Stars, not the first season of Survivor where Richard won, but he was like wrestling it, and it's a hilarious scene. Like, look it up, Lee. It's so funny.
Wow.
And he like tells the story incredibly. He gets bit. The thing bites onto him. I think just one more note about the animals, though. They say season 3 in Africa was by far the scariest because there were legit like lions and elephants roaming around like the boma that they set up around their camps, like the thorny branches, like to keep out predators. And there are rumors like the African military was on hand, like with guns and ordered to shoot, like in the event of any real danger. Yeah. And the people that were on that season, they've talked about like how scary it was. Like, they're like could see piercing eyes like in the middle of the night like, on the other side of the branches. Like that is, oh my God, that is scary.
That's real Survivor.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone had to leave the game because I don't know, because a shark bit them.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there have been obviously a lot of just injuries as well on Survivor. We've seen like a dislocated shoulder from a really rough challenge, or, you know, people hobbling from sprained ankles. But there's also been quite a few people medically evacuated, having medical problems out there on the island that are too important and too timely that they need to be taken care of right away rather than just hanging out on a beach for another 30 days. So I'm going to hit you guys right now with my top five medical evacuations in Survivor history. Top five, top five, top five. Top five, top five, top five. At number five, Neil from Khao Rong, who was removed from the game for multiple staph infections. This was a disgusting one. An infection is by far the easiest way to get out of Survivor. It's happened quite a few times. In this one, they bring a doctor to the Khao Rong Beach the day after a challenge, and they check so many people for wounds. They check Aubrey. They check NBA player Scott Pollard. Mm-hmm. They check another guy, and then they finally check Neil. And I was watching this clip this morning with the girls, and every time they showed this guy's wounds, they were like, he's got one on his knee that looks disgusting, and then he turns around and he's got one on his back that has like black pus coming out of it and scabbing. And the doctor's like, actually, that one's fine. The one on your knee is the problem because it's going to eat your knee in an hour.
Yeah.
They're like, what? So that's number five, staph infections. Yeah, it's hard to keep your wounds clean when you're on a beach. At number four, Mike from Samoa, who was pulled from the game for being too old. After a very intense challenge that I would call it a basket brawl. It's like down in the pit, there are people wrestling for a ball, almost like XFL kickoff style, where you got to run out there and grab the ball. Then they throw it to people on a platform who have to shoot like probably a 20-foot shot into a basketball hoop. This guy, Mike, is 62 years old, out there smashing his body into like 25-year-olds, throwing him around. He literally looks like a Jeffrey Tambor character. So, I mean, he's not the tightest bod out there. They come and check him the next day, and he's just like exhausted, dehydrated, and honestly, just sore from playing basketball against 20-year-olds for an hour. So Mike and Samoa, being old, that was a tough one. At number three, Shamar on Survivor Karamoan got sent home for having sand in his eye. This was a controversial one. Shamar was not well liked by his tribe. He had been targeted in previous tribal councils. He told his tribe, I'm gonna quit this game. Then the next day, he got a grain of sand in his eye. Nobody believed him.
Yeah.
But the doctors came out, checked it. They're like, this could seriously mess up his vision. He could get scratched corneas. You don't want sand in your eyes. Literally everybody knows that, but the guy had a tough run to start the season as Survivor, so nobody believed him. Legit evacuation, though. Yikes. At number two, my favorite Survivor medical evacuation, even though it comes in at number two. We've talked about it for a second here. Bruce on Panama, who got constipation after eating too many burgers. Went back and read through all of the information about this. He claims that he didn't poop for 10 days.
Yeah.
10 days. So then he wins a reward challenge and then he gets to eat like his met. It's actually a challenge where you can either eat while the other people compete or you're competing for immunity. He chose to eat while they compete. So he's eating burgers as fast as he can. And then afterwards he's like, couldn't pass a deuce. What a quote. Couldn't pass a deuce. You got to be careful. We've seen a lot of people get tripped up by eating too much on reward challenges, even if they're just lethargic. But Bruce, as far as I can tell, the only guy to be evacuated for eating too much. Tragic. But number one, the first and most dramatic medical evacuation, no doubt. Michael, season two Survivor, he fell into a fire while tending it and basically burned all the skin off his hands. That was scary.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. That's bad.
Yeah, he's just like blowing into the fire, you know, to help it grow a little bit, but kind of inhales smoke and basically passes out, catches himself with his hands, and that destroys his hands. He goes into the ocean, starts, you know, just trying to cool his body down, and then he's gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was bad. It was especially... this is Scoopum, right? Michael Scoopum.
He
sort of was coming into his own right at that time during the game as well. Like, he was really, really getting into it, as I remember. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point where he was sort of like hunting wild boar and like painting his face, you know, like Lord of the Fly style. And then he just fell into the fire and it was all over.
All right, great top five there, TK. Love that. Didn't even see that coming. All right, before we wrap this up, guys, Tass, starting with you, MVP of the episode. Who are you giving it to? Or what?
I'll give it to Jeff Probst for not being baited by Wendell. Just doing his job, staying professional. And no words thrown back at Wendell whatsoever. Jeff Probst, that's why he's the best.
This game is fantastic. I like when he says that. All right, Lee, who you got for MVP?
Back-to-back weeks for my man Wendell. I'm telling you, man, if he keeps doing this where he keeps on snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, he's going to be MVP every week. I mean, just incredible that he's still alive. I mean, although I know you go to like edge of extinction anyway, so you're not officially dead, but
yeah.
I just thought he was a goner last night. So great job, Wendell. He's playing some other sort of mind trick game on everyone else, I think, and I think that's fantastic.
Trey, do you, I mean, because you've said before you like Wendell's chances to win again, to win this season. Do you still believe that? Like, I mean, even with this edit he is getting, can Wendell truly win this game?
I mean, I'm wearing a hashtag Team Wendell buff, so can he? Absolutely. He's going to go on a run of individual immunities here, but also there's no way he's going to win.
Yeah.
It's not looking good for my man. It's pretty funny that we finally started a Survivor podcast, and then like the one guy who's ever been on our show is in the crosshairs for the entirety of the first 2 hours we've been talking about it. That's why my MVP is Michelle, because she went from last episode being one of the two who was possibly going to go to now having Wendell on the defensive. She helped with the Yule vote, and she's really flying under the radar here. I think she's playing a great game.
Yeah, 100% agree.
JD?
MVP, Fire Tokens.
Good one.
They are... Well, they really got into Yule's head, for one thing. Who knows how valuable they'll be, but they are definitely a factor in the game. And I think just getting back to just going full circle here, Yule being the strategic player that he is, I think he just got overwhelmed by things like Fire Tokens and the Edge of Extinction. And being an old school player coming in, the game in general is more fluid. There's more hidden advantages and idols that he has to contend with. Factor in Fire Tokens and Edge of Extinction. I mean, the strategy of who am I going to vote out on good terms in case they come back from Edge of Extinction is just, I think it just did his head in. And the Fire Tokens as well. So Fire Tokens, MVP of this episode for me.
Yeah, it's well said. I mean, it really did appear that way. I'll give MVP to, what's that guy's name again? The guy in the Boston hat? I'll go Boston Rob. I'll give Boston Rob an MVP just because he's the greatest hitter in MLB history now, batting 750 in the clutch. But that was smooth. I always do love a good flashback, too. In a Survivor episode where it's like, okay, you think this is happening, and then it's like, oh, 10 minutes prior, Boston Rob just sprinted up there with his portly belly there and got all those, basically all of them.
A portly chap.
It almost worked out for him that he didn't find all of them in a weird way. You know what I mean? Like, it was almost beneficial that Tyson got one or he overlooked one or something like that. I think that actually helped him. That Tyson got the one, and everybody knows Tyson has the one, but just really no one knows who has the other three. But Boston Rob coming through in the clutch.
It also showed how great he is at bluffing and lying, basically, because he had the three tokens and he definitely fooled me and he fooled Trey. And I think we were all fooled until we saw that edit.
Yeah.
That he, you know, none of them suspected him at all.
He even was smart enough to ask Amber, like, just jokingly, hey, you got any? And I was like, ha ha ha, she would tell you if she had them. There's no way he's got them. Smooth.
And considering that they all knew that he got there first, and he still convinced them that he didn't have any, that's pretty great.
Yeah, that's a great point. They all knew he was there on the scene first, and then he's just playing dumb that he couldn't find any. You're absolutely right. Okay, so we have the merge. We got the drop your buffs. That's happening next week. Very, very exciting. always one of the generally usually one of the more enjoyable episodes from a season, because it's just pure insanity. And by the looks of it, it's going to be like everybody's throwing around names and who do you trust and all that. My final question here before we say goodbye is, like, who do you have sort of the most faith in, or who is in the best spot heading into this merge? JD, who do you think it is?
Going into the merge?
Yeah. Who's set up well?
I think Jeremy is extremely set up well.
Yeah.
He is under the radar. It seems like there's a pretty strong alliance with him, Denise and Kim, and possibly Tony as well. So yep. If it's the four of them, then there's two other alliances that they have to deal with. Both of them have three, and one of them has Wendell, who seems like he is on his way out, but who knows? But I would say Jeremy.
Okay. Trey?
I think it's tough. I mean, I kind of think that next week's vote is going to be... it's going to be big. We're going to see some serious flipping. We're going to see some original DeKal Red Tribe flip over to the Blue Tribe. So that's why I kind of got to think of a Blue Tribe member who I think is in the best spot. And I think it might be Michelle. I think she's just doing... she does such a great job of just cruising along and throwing... throwing concerns on other people, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of getting it off her. She has befriended everybody that she's been on a tribe with. She's playing an incredible social game. And I think that I think Blue is going to be looking good come merge time.
Yeah, interesting. With only having the three people, sometimes that's beneficial. You're absolutely right. And
Kim is ready to flip. I mean, she set up right with Jeremy and Denise, who were both originally Soleil members. So that changes the numbers to a Blue advantage right there. Right.
Yeah, that's true. And just so everybody knows, because it's always important when you head into the merge, like where the ammo lies. Sarah has a steal a vote. Sophie has an immunity idol. So does Kim. And Jeremy has that safety without power. The peace out, as we've called it, where he can just get up and leave a tribal council. So that's where that's who has all the weapons right now, because that could come into play too, especially if we have some sort of split type of vote here, and their steal vote could work, or an immunity idol if people don't know you have it and stuff like that. So it should be good. All right, so get your questions in. NoDunks@theAthletic.com. If you've got a Survivor specific question, throw Survivor in the subject, and we'll be back with No Buffs next week. As for Monday's film session, I know we had a poll up. What was leading the poll, by the way? Does anyone remember? Was it Air Bud?
It's got to be Air Bud.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. We're going to hold on. We're going to get to Air Bud. Don't you worry. We'll tackle that dog. But we're going New School, because New School is dominating in Survivor. We have decided we're going to watch Uncut Gems for Monday's film session. So that is your homework here coming up on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Got to get Uncut Gems in. I know you international Netflix people, I think you got it. You have it on that service. Not here in the States yet, but I guess it's what? Video on demand? We can buy it here in the States?
Yeah, we can buy it. We can rent it.
Okay. Yeah, rent it. That's what I meant. So Uncut Gems, Monday's film session, and we're working on a new squad. We'll obviously be hitting the beach. We got No Buffs. A whole lot more in the works. Until next time, the tribe has spoken.